It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed of the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Larry. How are we this Saturday morning?
We're back again.
We're back and the kids are back in school. Summer is over.
I'll tell you, I guess it's about time for that to come to play. And we have such a riveting topic today to talk about.
I know. I'm beginning to feel like the Grim Reaper here. Last show, we talked about life insurance, death, and so forth. And now this weekend, or this Saturday, and probably next Saturday, we're going to talk about the estate planning documents that you need to have, or I tongue-in-cheek say the death documents. But we all need to have these. Let's get through the dreariness of these discussions, but we will find some more riveting topics here in the future.
Well, I certainly hope so. You know, why do you have to document all this stuff? I mean, you know, we have
family. One word, family.
Family assets, and you know, why do we have to put it all in writing?
Well, money makes people do funny things, and the last thing you want is your family squabbling over some of these issues that we're going to talk about, and you know, especially if you have minor children involved. I mean, it can just get. It can get really nasty, really ugly. We have some examples that we've both experienced in our careers. And it's a really simple process just to get done. But in a study that I was reading the other day, over 75% of people don't have these documents in place.
Wow. 25% have prepared for the future and 75% have not. That's a pretty alarming statistic.
Yeah, we've spent more time planning our vacations and so forth than we do our retirement or our death.
And we know how well it works planning vacation.
I'm not even going to go there.
I wouldn't touch that one. I really would not touch that one.
I shared with you. We'll just leave it at that.
All right. We don't want to put everything out there in the public domain.
So first document comes off the top of my head, a will. So, we all should have a will.
But we all do have a will.
We should have a will written the way we want it written.
That's the difference. I know most people have a will. I was talking to someone, in fact, last night I was at dinner with my wife, and we had a very nice young lady serving us, and we got to talking about things, and she mentioned that she's a school teacher and has a part-time job waiting tables to make a little extra money, or her husband's currently looking for a job. They just moved here from out of town, and she has two children, and the topic came up. That they do not have a will or any documents in place. And we got into a discussion of, well, you do have a will because the state of Illinois says what's going to happen to your kids and your assets if in the unfortunate event something happens to both her and her husband. She was a little shocked at that. She thought that her sister would just take the kids and raise them and everything would work out great, and that's not how it works.
Well, it shouldn't be a problem. I mean, the government always gets it right.
The government always gets it right.
Okay. Well, I have a list here. You can chime in, let me know what you think, but top 10 reasons to have a will. Decide how your estate will be distributed.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because I've been through probate a number of times, both for family and for clients. And it is amazing to me how money brings out the worst in people, because whether it's physical objects, you know, grandma's table, the grandfather clock, you know, heirlooms, or just, you know, music boxes that have been gathered over the years, that people have an idea of what they are entitled to get. And unless it is put in place into a will, that is not necessarily what is going to happen. And it creates a lot of ill will. Pardon the pun there.
Wow.
But, yeah, well, I'm on top of my game this morning. But very disappointed. And, you know, you really don't want your siblings or your other family members, children, whoever it happens to be, that survives fighting over those types of things.
Number two, and I agree with you, and I guess we both agree on money makes people do funny things. Probably the most important one for those that have minor children, this is the document where you decide who will take care of your children.
Yeah, and the issue there is, as I explained last night to this nice young lady, is if something happens to both her and her husband, her children, who are both minors at this point, they're both under the age of 10, go into foster care. They go into the state child care system until an attorney is appointed and goes to court and gathers the information on lineage and who's related to who and whatnot, and goes before a judge, which could be days, could be weeks, so that your kids are going to be in the state system for a period of time until the courts decide who is entitled to take custody, which in her case would require her sister coming in, her husband's family potentially coming in. And she kind of indicated that there might be a discussion, shall we say, between those two, because they both would want to take authority and guardianship over the kids. And obviously, both of them can't. So, again, you're letting the courts decide what's going to happen instead of what you want to happen.
Right. And I agree totally. I have four minor children myself. A couple of the other ones here that we've already touched on, but you're going to avoid the probate process. You mentioned how efficient that process is, or lack thereof.
Yeah, and probate, really, I have mixed feelings on that. The biggest objection that I hear from people is probate is public. And that's true. Probate is open to the public. You can go to the courts. You can look up the probate of somebody's estate for anyone that you want to. And, you know, it basically would cover all of the documentation of their assets, how they were distributed, debts related to that, anything that relates to the probate process. But it's not that terrible, depending on the size of the estate. You can't actually go in, and if the entire estate, all assets are under $100,000, then you can use a simplified version of probate by simply filing with the courts, and it's a pretty easy process. But if you don't qualify under that $100,000 rule, then whoever is the executor of the estate, and I'm going to throw my opinion in for what it's worth, make sure the person that you appoint as your executor knows that they are appointed as executor.
And they're reliable.
And they're reliable. And they're willing to take that upon themselves. You know, appointing a brother or sister or uncle or aunt who lives in another state miles away from where you're at, is probably not the best idea because it is an extensive process. Probate, you have to wait 6 months from the date of death before you can distribute the entire estate in order to accommodate any outstanding bills that may have existed that take that need to be paid from the estate before that it can be closed. So probate's not a terrible process. It is public, and in many cases, it's not the best way to approach it.
And you just touch on that. You have to decide who will wind up the affairs. This is number five of your estate. Obviously, you want that person to be preferably local, as you mentioned, as well as you just want to make sure that they have a good head on their shoulder and they're going to be able to emotionally handle the responsibility of following your wishes and so forth, because, like I said, money makes people do funny things. This doesn't apply to everyone, but it can minimize your estate taxes. If you have estate tax issues, good for you, because that limit is pretty high. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Number six is probably my favorite. You can disinherit individuals who would otherwise stand to inherit. You can change your mind. I like that.
Well, it gives you the option, and there are those out there who would like to direct from the grave, so to speak, through a will, and specifically dictating how assets are distributed, when they're distributed, and to whom they are distributed. So you have the ability to direct and to also change your mind on those things as time goes on.
I think we've all seen those scenes in the movie where the rich person's will is being read to all the different family members and so forth, and there's always little surprises. I find that humorous when someone is thinking they're going to get a whole lot of money and they don't. And actually, a real live experience for me with this was when I first got out of college, we had a client who was very wealthy back in Pennsylvania, and he had two children who were not, motivated. And he had his own foundation where he was, at any given time, he would be putting four different students through college. So they would go through an application process and so forth. And he would then agree to pay their college. They had to keep a B average to keep that going. And he kept warning his children, look, you need to get your act together or you're going to be cut out. And his estate was north of $10 million. And I ended up leaving the company and moving to the St. Louis area. But at that time, it was still written that the kids were only going to get $600,000 each, and that was it. So there's a way that you can, as you said, have hands from the grave or be able to control things while you're in the ground, if you will. You can make gifts and donations with your will. As we were talking about, you can avoid legal challenges. You can change your mind. We talked about that one. And the last one is because tomorrow is not promised. And this is one that I think most people overlook. Tomorrow is not guaranteed. This is not something that we should be procrastinating on. Larry, any thoughts on procrastination? Not that you're a procrastinator, but...
Not that I'm a procrastinator. Only I am a selective procrastinator. It's a different type of
individual. I like
that.
That's like my selective hearing.
I know how that works. Selective procrastinator. You really, in our practice, in our financial practice, one of the things that we talk about, and I'll put the caveat out there at this point, my disclaimer, we are not attorneys. We do not give legal advice. These discussions are for general purposes, and if anything, we hope that it will drive our listeners to seek appropriate legal advice and to get the proper documents in place.
We do not play one on TV or on the radio either.
Either way. So we're simply trying to shine a light on some very, very important issues that are easily taken care of in advance of an event of death, if you will, but impossible in some cases after the fact. So having said that, we got the legal ease out of the way. Seek your attorney's advice. Now, what was the question, John? I forgot.
Oh, we were talking about procrastinating, and I said not that you're a procrastinator. Yeah. So, but, the will is the part where the document where you get to actual property as opposed to different accounts and so forth. But, you know, this chair goes here, this chair goes there, and that's where you would, this is the document where those items would be covered. Whereas with a trust and so forth, which we'll talk about later, is more based on the different accounts and the money amounts, the actual cash and so forth.
Yeah, will is really the first document. Again, in our financial practice, one of the things that we ask all of our clients is, do you have a will? When was it last updated? And many times they'll say, oh, yeah, we did a will. Old Uncle Harry's friend was an attorney, and, you know, he did one for us. And when was that? Well, it was about 20 years ago. And, you had young children then, correct? Yeah, oh, yeah. And what did the will say? Well, it appointed a guardian and so forth. Well, now that your kids are adults, don't you think it might be time to review that and to make the appropriate changes? We recommend that every 3 to 5 years, you at least take a look at the will to determine if there are things in state law that have changed, because that happens periodically, that may affect the provisions of the will, and get it updated with the appropriate language. So, number one, you really need to do a will. Many people say, well, I'm married. If something happens to me, everything goes to my spouse and vice versa. Well, that's great, but what about something happening to both of you at the same time? Because then we get into all kinds of issues about who died first, who died second, and the person who died last actually is the person's whose will, if they have one, directs the disposition of assets and disposition of the estate. So you must, in my opinion, again, must have a will done by an attorney, not necessarily one done on the internet, because there are a lot of nuances that go into a will in specific situations that need to be addressed. So we think that having a will in place is probably the best place to start at a minimum, and they're not super, super expensive. I'm not going to quote any prices, but it's something that it's well worth the time and effort for you to gain the advice of attorney and get it down in writing.
So we shouldn't be doing legaldocuments.com is what you're saying.
That would not be something I would do personally.
Okay. Anything else we need to cover on a will? I think I did a pretty good job of going over the important reasons why we should have one and that it's really not a difficult process to get one completed.
Well, and the other thing that I will relate to that is, okay, now you've done a will. Congratulations. Good for you. Make sure somebody knows where it is. Have appropriate people who are involved in your family or your state who need to know about these things, or your personal representative or attorney, make sure they have a copy of it. I've run into a couple of situations with clients where they have done a will, and when something happens, no one can seem to locate it. And if it's not locatable and it hasn't been put on file with the county or the state, then it's just as good as not having one.
And you know, in our case, the people that will be, if something happens to my wife and I, the family, the people that would be taking our children, will have a copy of. That's a good place to get a copy out, as well as a safe deposit box or somewhere where it can be protected from a fire and so forth, because keeping a copy in a house, and if you have a fire and it's all gone, and nowadays with cloud data storage and so forth, there's many ways to make sure that it's easily accessible in the time of need.
I think that's probably a good discussion on will. If you have additional questions, be sure to send them to us. We will either answer them if possible or get one of the attorneys, many of the attorneys that we work with, to respond to you directly. And no, they won't send you a bill. We'll get you an answer. But send it to John Graney at jgraney, G-R-A-N-E-Y, at Nicol, N-I-C-O-L, financial.com, or LLEXO, L-L-E-X-O-W, at nicolfinancial.com.
Okay, so moving on, the next one will be what's called a durable financial power of attorney. So in this case, you're not actually dead, but you're incapacitated. You are in a coma. You're in a situation where you cannot make financial decisions, any decisions in that matter, because of your incapacitation. So this is the document that says, okay, this person will handle these decisions for me until I either recover or until the will takes over because you passed on.
Yeah, durable power of attorney, or POA, sometimes power of attorney as it is called, it allows you to designate an individual to manage your property on your behalf should you become unable to do so. And I think that's the key. Just because you execute a durable power of attorney, it has no power until you are unable to act on your own behalf. So it's simply a piece of paper that designates who will make decisions on your behalf in the event that you are unable to do that due to illness, accident, whatever it happens to be. And that's critically important because in the event of an individual who, let's say they were in an auto accident and they were in a coma or unable for some reason not to be able to make decisions and act upon themselves, bills come in, bills have to be paid, decisions have to be made, and we're talking about durable power of attorney, so it's dealing with assets. You know, who's going to pay the bills, who's going to respond to taxes, who's going to answer inquiries, those types of things, and it only comes into play in the event that the individual who provided it is unable to respond. In our case, I have durable power of attorney for my wife for things that are not jointly held. I also have that for my daughter in the event something would be needed there. And she has the same for both of us. So in all cases, someone is designated and has legal authority to act in the situation where someone was incapacitated for a period of time.
Correct. I mean, you're going to need, this individual is going to need to handle any real estate, medical expenses. We'll get into another form that this person should probably be listed on. Investing, retirement benefits, transferring, selling assets. If you're a small business owner, who's going to take over the business? If you don't have a partner, who's going to take over that to keep it running? This is the document that says this is the person to do those things, and you want to make sure it's somebody that you trust. You certainly don't want to have someone in there who doesn't have their head on their shoulders. Again, not to beat this dead horse, but money makes people do funny things.
And I might point out that some I have had clients who said, well, I don't want to give anyone the ability to sell my house. And a durable power of attorney gives you that ability to select what they have authority to do and not to do. So you can specifically take out any provisions that you do not want to give someone else the power of attorney to act upon. So it gives you authority to make those decisions in advance. And again, I'll go back to the fact, if you're electing someone to be your power of attorney, give them a copy of it. Make sure that they realize what their duties would be in the event that they were required.
Correct. And once you pass, if you were to die, the power of attorney ends at that point. And that's when the will and the other documents would come into effect.
Let's talk about medical directives.
Oh, this is a good one. The Maria Shivo case comes to mind, I'm sure. Many of out there remember that situation in Florida. Very sad situation. The husband had one version of her wishes. The family, the parents had another version. And this happens a lot. This is a document where your medical decisions, should you become incapacitated, who directs your wishes. So things like, do you want pain medicine? Do you want food? Do you want water? Do you want the plug pulled? It comes down to those basic decisions that need to be made. Think about choosing this person wisely, because this is a very emotional time. It's very difficult.
Potentially is a life and death situation. And so you must choose the person you elect to do that. A medical directive in many states is also sometimes referred to as a living will, mm-hmm. because the individual is still living but cannot direct their own care. So someone else is designated to make those medical decisions. And it really is just another power of attorney. We talked about the power of attorney for durable goods or assets. This is a power of attorney for medically what happens in the event someone was in a coma or unable to direct their own health care, who would have the authority to do that. And I want to expand that a little further, because it's not only directing it, but who is has the authority to receive medical information. Today we have HIPAA, which is to protect medical information being released to anyone other than the individual that it relates to.
In case of the government getting it right.
Yeah, exactly. Another one. And under HIPAA, under many of the directives of the various states, if you do not have a medical directive or living will, whatever you want to call it, you are not able to gather medical information. I had a client a number of 5-6 years ago whose daughter became of age to go to college and went to college from her home state here in Illinois to Florida. And the family received a call a month or so later. She was involved, had gotten very, very ill and was unable to speak. She was under sedation. And the hospital called the family and said, you really need to come to Florida, but would not tell them why, other than the fact that it regarded their daughter, and would not give them any medical information because they did not have a medical directive. So for as long as it took them to get a flight and go to Florida, and then once they got there, they still would not release the information. They had to go to court. They got an attorney. They had an emergency court session to get the judge to allow them, after they proved that they were the parents, to give them the authority to act medically and make medical decisions for their daughter. So if someone's going to college in your family, you don't have a medical directive, I suggest that the next thing you do is, again, find an attorney that you can trust and have them draw that up. Because typically, if the attorney is worth their salt, they will, when you're doing your will, they will go ahead and, sorry, couldn't help it. They will go ahead and talk about doing a medical directive for each of the family members, as well as the durable power of attorney.
And I'm looking at a sample of one here. It's it's one page. It's not that much information to fill out, but it can. It's an amazing how this one page can make things a lot easier. You know, my thought would be if your healthcare power of attorney would also, you want to make sure that they have the HIPAA release form, the medical information release form, so they can quickly take care of those issues for you.
Very important items. You know, have the will, have the durable power of attorney, and also have the medical directive. What kind of coffee are we sampling today, John?
Today is the, I like the name of it anyway, the Aztec Heritage Organic. And I'm having a tough time with the organic label, Larry. If it's a plant, coffee is a plant, it grows out of the ground, isn't coffee organic?
Inherently, yes, I would say it is.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is very good. It's very light, not to get too reviewish on you, but it's well balanced, if you will. It's a good afternoon coffee. Sitting here Saturday morning, it's not really helping me.
John's got one eye closed, and you know, this is
lack
not,
of sleep. It's overrated.
Yeah, this is not the one that opens both eyes, but at least one. But I'm going to tell you why they call it organic. Would you like me to do that, John?
Please. Maybe I can work with some of this marketing.
Maybe you can work that. There you go. The Aztec Harvest Organic Coffee is the finest organic coffee grown in Mexico. The coffee is naturally produced on a small farm without the use of pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, there's a lot of sides here, or any synthetic fertilizers. That's why it is organic, because it is pure. It's not tainted by any of the chemicals that are often used in growing and harvesting these types of things. It is refreshing. I was surprised when I took the first sip or two and enjoyed the flavor. And again, it's not real harsh, it's not real heavy, but it has a great flavor. And so we're going to thank both Scott and Nancy from the Chef Shop.
And all the people that work there. Every time I go in there, they're helpful, they're so friendly. It's just a nice experience going in there.
It's a great place to visit. And if you have any interest in kitchen gadgets, you may be there a while. You just bought a cherry pitter. Say that three times fast, John. But the Chef Shop is located at 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois, 62025. They're in the Schnucks Plaza, right next to Target. The phone number, if you want to call them to see if they have anything specific you're looking for, like a cherry pitter, you can call them at 618-659-9840. You can go on and email them at chefshop, that's chefs.shoppe@prodigy.net, or check out their website. But the coffee this morning, I think, is fit the bill for this particular Saturday morning show.
Well, you like yours a little weaker than I do.
That is true. That is very
true. And that's putting it mildly.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think we were going to be able to get through all the different forms and topics for this in one show. So what we'll do next show is we will recap what we talked about today, which was your will, your financial power of attorney, and your medical power of attorney. And then next week, and we also talked about the HIPAA release form. But next week, we can get into a little more of the difference between a medical directive and a living will. And then for those that have sizable estates, we'll go into discussions on revocable trusts and some of the things that you can do with that for your estate plan.
Exciting topic, John.
And then we'll find something next, the show after, we have to find something upbeat.
Send us your ideas, please. We want something fun to talk about. No, seriously, John, if you have children, I'd say the most important thing I'd take out of today's show is if you have children, don't let the state decide who's going to take care of them in the event something happens to you. Put it down in writing. Make sure you have a will. Make sure that people know where it's at, and that your wishes, whatever they may be, are carried out in the unfortunate event that something happens to you. So check in with us. We can get you in touch with a good quality attorney, or if you know of one, please go see them. Again, we are not attorneys. We do not provide legal advice. This information is simply put out there to make you aware of something that you need to be taking care of. And every individual that we deal with on a financial basis, that is a question we ask, and we encourage them strongly if they do not have one in place, that they get it in place, because that's a key component of any financial plan. If you're going to have a plan, remember, it's got to be in writing. You have to have specific time frames and objectives. You have to implement it, which means sign the will. And then you have to monitor it, review it every 3 to 5 years to make sure that changes in the law are reflected in your wishes and what you want to actually accomplish. So we're getting close, John. We're right on target here. That'll wrap things up for this Saturday, and we look forward to talking to you again on the radio.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at llexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
Thanks for listening to the Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.